And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show for Friday, November 3rd. This is Stephen Nesbitt filling in for Derek Van Riper, who's traveling to the Arizona Fall League, where Keith Law just was, and I'm here, as always, with Keith Law. On this episode, we're going to look back at the 2023 World Series. There will be spoilers. Heads up, if you haven't caught up. We'll take a look at the road ahead for both the D-backs and the Rangers, and later in the show, we'll talk a little bit about the guys who are now just becoming free agents, many for the first time. Keith, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I enjoyed this series, but I have to say, after some late nights, live blogging, and 5 a.m. wake-ups with the infant, ending in game five was okay with me. But that was kind of leads me to my first question was, this was such an impressive series for the Rangers, what they did against the Astros, what they did against the, everybody, right? The Orioles and everyone along the way. But this very easily could have been a Houston and Philly series, right? They both got to game seven. It could have, maybe it's still going on at this point if that were the case, but we got what we got. And I think it was a better series than it will be remembered for. Game one was incredible, right? Corey Seager takes Paul Sewald deep. Adolis Garcia wins it. That could have gone the other way. The D-backs might have had a chance in game four, if not for Miguel Castro being unable to finish off Geraldo Perdomo. He puts a changeup in the dirt, scores the first run, leads to five runs in that inning. Mm-hmm. And then Christian Walker, the next inning, boots a double play ball, and that turns into five more runs. So, and then game five was a nail biter until the very end with Zach Gallen finally showing like Zach Gallen form.
Oh my God. And, yes. That had the potential to go down as an all-time performance. We don't have to talk about this, but the decision to leave him in for a third time through the order, but he hadn't given up a hit, right? How do you, at that point, and with a very well used, like heavily used bullpen too, I'm not criticizing the decision, but think of how differently we would be talking about him if he doesn't give up the hit, doesn't give up a run, et cetera, gets pulled before that, right? He was, for six innings, as good as anybody we've ever seen pitch in a World Series, I would say, particularly given who he was facing. And there's a part of me too that's like, I'm glad that was Zach Gallen's last playoff appearance, because we didn't see the same Zach Gallen the last couple of times. The real Zach Gallen. This is who he is.
Yeah, it was. I think they made the right move to leave him in, because you would get absolutely ruined if you Blake Snell that situation and the bullpen blew it. Because Paul Sewald, I guess the Rangers had his number in this series, and so I think they made the right move. I agree with you. I'm glad that we had that Gallen-esque performance, because Merrill Kelly had certainly showed up. Even Brandon Vaught had shown up, but we were waiting for Zach Gallen. As I look at this postseason, you know, we're always trying to pull something from the postseason. What was the thing that a team leaned into, the trend that we're going to pick up and move forward? What's the magic formula, leverage relievers, bringing a starter out of the bullpen? What do we have here? And I'm not sure that there is one to glean here. I think maybe the lessons learned maybe are more impactful than the formula to steal. Maybe the lesson is that you can survive without a third starter for the first couple rounds of the playoffs.
Yeah, how about that?
if you don't have a fourth starter, you're going to get exposed eventually. And both kind of didn't have a fourth starter, though the Rangers ultimately did benefit from having traditional starters in the pen. John Gray, Andrew Heaney, Dane Dunning helped them out. And whereas the Diamondbacks didn't really, except for the one time we saw Ryan Nelson really step up in a blowout and keep that game, you know, within striking distance, kind of.
I would even take that. I like that. I hadn't thought about that until you just brought it up too. But you know, one of my main criticisms of Rob Thompson, who's like untouchable around here in Philly, was he actually had two long men, actual starters, in his bullpen, Taiwan Walker and Michael Lorenzen. And what was it? Walker never pitched. And Lorenzen only pitched once, I think, in that series against Arizona. He had situations where going to a long man would have made sense. And, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that's just, that was obvious. You didn't even think twice about it. And Bochy, I don't think he was perfect at all, but he did seem to get, I have length in the bullpen. And in general, went to those guys, whether it was to get a longer start or to just try to soak up more than three outs out of the bullpen. And the Phillies lost for a couple of reasons, but that I thought was one of them, was that Thompson just didn't treat, he had two long men on the roster and didn't treat them that way. And if there is one thing maybe to take away, if we're looking for smaller lessons, maybe that's one of them, is that in an era of hyper-specialization, going longer with some of your relievers, you know, up to nine outs, certainly, or nine batters at least, would be an advantage. And particularly if you're in, you know, I thought Lavulo, I actually think Lavulo managed a great series. I thought he was, of the last four managers we saw going back to the LCSs, I thought he did the best job. Yeah. They just got outplayed, but he was pretty good. Actually, in most situations, he really, I think, did do a lot of the right things with his bullpen, was trying to get length where he could, recognizing also that he was short-staffed relative to Texas and relative to the Phillies as well.
Yeah, and you're hung out to dry if you don't have a four-star. We're going to get to that in a minute. Mike Hazen had some thoughts about his own decision at the trade deadline to not go get another starter.
I saw,
which I like to take. We all said they needed another starter, and it actually worked out better than they could have anticipated. But if you're going to game four with Joe Mantiply on the mound in the first inning, followed by Castro and Salfranc, I don't remember who all was out there. I think Ryan Nelson was the second Nelson and like the fourth or fifth pitcher to come into that game, and he ends up carrying.
Yeah, there were like four guys named Nelson, right? I think Russ Ortiz pitched at one point.
Yeah. And so anyway, 2 years ago, these two teams were both 100 loss teams. That's going to be a topic that gets a lot of attention. I'll even give it some attention in the coming days. So the Orioles, they figured it out. They did it very different ways. The Rangers spent $500 million on their middle infield, and they got a ring. Nothing matters except the ring. It all pays it for itself.
Flags fly forever.
The Diamondbacks mostly traded and developed these guys, so it was a different way. Is there anything you think other teams, non-playoff teams, try to take from what these two were able to do?
I mean, I hope the big lesson is there's a reward for investing in your product. Because if you look at the Rangers in particular, like the Diamondbacks were outscored on the season. They're the lowest win total, I think, of any of the 12 playoff teams. So I don't know that you can take huge lessons from them. I think the Diamondbacks are in good shape going forward. They just kind of got there early, not taking anything away from them, just that, you know, things broke their way in October. Whereas Texas, to me, that is the classic, we're developing. We've drafted and we are building a stronger club. We're building a really strong farm system. They've been drafting better. They've been doing really well internationally. They seem to be developing better than they have in quite some time. And they chose ownership and Chris Young when he took over as GM. They made a pretty clear choice too, that young talent is coming. We're going to go spend now so that when the young talent shows up, we're already ready. We're already improving. That to me, I hope that's the real takeaway, and that more clubs look at it that way and say, we'll go pay for, especially for high end talent. They were not swimming very much in the shallow end of the free agent pool. They went after stars. And then when Josh Young came up, when Evan Carter came up, my God, Evan Carter got there sooner than anybody expected. The young players started showing up. It's like, oh, there's already a pretty good team in place here. Leody Taveras has his breakout year. Hey, next year it's Wyatt Langford, right? They're going to have the basically four outfielders, who I think they'll probably cycle through the three outfield spots in DH because they've got the opening anyway. You just look at that club and say, well, it's a great mix of homegrown and outside talent. And the farm system also allowed them to go out and make some deadline acquisitions. And they gave up some pretty good players. The guys they traded Cole Reagans for Aroldis Chapman, which, you know, they got the ring. So no one's going to criticize the trade. Cole Reagans looked pretty damn good afterwards. And the guys they traded for Jordan Montgomery, I like quite a bit. That all happens because they chose to do almost these parallel tracks. We're going to draft and develop, or sign and develop. And then we're going to spend, and we're going to spend sooner. We're not going to wait for the young talent to get there, which I think is kind of Baltimore's situation, where they haven't really spent. They have built like nobody in, you know, what really, yeah, go back to Houston, actually, this group was in Houston. they have built as well as anybody. It's time for them to spend. And that may be on ownership more than anyone else. They're going to have to go out and spend, whether free agency or trading for more expensive players. They need to go out and acquire more pitching in particular. And I wonder if anyone in Baltimore looks at Texas and says, that's the one thing we could do differently. Not that Baltimore's done wrong, but just look at Texas and say, that's the one thing we can change to have a better chance in the postseason next year. It did nothing wrong in the regular season, but I do think their pitching issues were exposed pretty quickly in October. And that's the one thing I could say that Texas did quite differently.
Yeah, it's something that I think we actually seen quite a bit of lately with teams looking at their window of contention based on when their core is expected to arrive, the internal guys. And I think you need to adjust and say, let's start the spending a year early. So the drawback story is the Tigers, who thought they were close and they went and spent a bunch of money unwisely, and they weren't close. And so they never got there. But the Cubs, they went and got Stroman at a time when people are saying, why are you spending money on Marcus Stroman? You were coming off a terrible season when you just recently got rid of the previous core. But turns out, they were very close to being a playoff team this year, and they still had to do some spending around that. You know, bringing Cody Bellinger, we'll get to him later in the show. And then you see, Baltimore, I think they had their time for their window of contention, and we expected they were going to be in contention. We didn't think they'd be the best team in the American League this year.
Right.
But what if you had gone out and brought in a premier starter? So instead of Kyle Gibson or alongside Kyle Gibson, you have an actual number one, number two, so that you're not counting on Grayson Rodriguez to give you a full rookie season, which he was great in the second half, but didn't have it initially. And so I do think that lesson can be learned from this postseason, that don't just project where your internal core is ready and plan for that date. Plan a little bit in advance so that you can be there. And if you realize you're behind the eight ball, like the Rangers and the Diamondbacks did, go do something at the trade deadline to make up for that. Orioles did a little bit, right? They got Jack Flaherty, but did they go out like the Rangers did and get Aroldis Chapman, to get Max Scherzer, to get Jordan Montgomery? The Diamondbacks didn't get a starter. We'll get back to that. Once again, we're teasing that one hard. But they went and got Paul Sewald, a closer, a bona fide closer, and which they flipped through six guys over the course of the season. And so they needed one, and they got Tommy Pham. So they did work at the trade deadline, even if they didn't get that number one piece. I think that's a way you can catch yourself up and supplement, even if maybe you didn't go hard enough in the offseason and realize your team's actually ready.
Yeah, and I liked the Flaherty acquisition. I didn't know he was going to, I don't know if there's a health issue going on there. He just was not good, obviously, when he got to Baltimore. He was much worse after the trade deadline in ways I don't think anybody anticipated. Obviously, the Orioles didn't anticipate it, or they wouldn't have traded for him. And still would like to see, hopefully, Flaherty goes somewhere else next year and gets a little bit of a reset, too, because I think he's a much better pitcher than what he showed, particularly in Baltimore. But also, they weren't targeting high-end guys. They made one trade, I think, last winter to add a starting pitcher, and it was Cole Irvin, who I didn't love the trade. Also, they gave up a prospect I really like, Darnell Hernández, who had a great year in the Oakland system. He was a holdover from the previous regime also, and I think that's a little bit of why he was not one of the Orioles' core guys, too. What we have not really seen is Mike Elias and company trading one of their big prospects, Colton Cowser, Joey Ortiz. These guys have a lot of value. Joey Ortiz has been a top 100 guy for me once or twice already. Colton Cowser not on my top 100, but certainly on like MLB Pipeline had him on theirs. These are good prospects. You should get quite a return for them. But we haven't seen them do that yet. And that is a move they're going to have to make. I understand. I've been in a front office. It's like, that's our guy, right? We drafted that guy, right? There is always a little bit of a bias, a little emotional attachment. But at some point, they're just, to me, they've been unbalanced for a while. They are so good at drafting, developing, identifying position players. But you can only play nine of them. And so at some point, you're going to have to flip some of them for pitching, which they had largely eschewed in the draft, at least. And it's fine if that's a strategy, but at some point they're going to have to try to go get some of those higher end starters. Cause I feel like you and I may have even talked about this after their loss in the first round of their first round of the playoffs, where Bradish and Rodriguez weren't good. And maybe it was because they're both very talented. Maybe they just kind of ran out of gas in a long season for them. It's entirely possible. Maybe they go get a Verlander type at the trade deadline, and the story's at least a little bit different. That's the thing I think we really need to see from them. And if I'm in Baltimore looking at Texas and saying, can we take anything away from that? That would be the one thing, is to say we need to go out and get some higher, try to target some higher end pitching, as scary as that market can be. Because obviously the Rangers, their big pitching acquisition last winter was Jacob DeGrom, which is kind of funny that they spent all that money on the guy and right. And win the World Series anyway, because they, oh no, it had nothing to do with him, actually. Nothing at all.
Hey, he got a ring too.
Yes, he did. Yep.
So zooming in on the Diamondbacks here, Mike Hazen said, even before the World Series started, he said, hey, I regret not bringing in the start. Having Jordan Montgomery would have really helped us a lot. So not that they didn't do anything. They brought in Pham, they brought in Sewald. And it's not that he didn't look for it. He said he chased every starting pitcher that was in the market. And there were mistakes to be made. Let's be clear about that. Montgomery was the exception here. There was a Lance Lynn out there. There was a Jack Flaherty. Even Aaron Civale was only okay. Michael Lorenzen threw a no-hitter, but was not even good enough to stay on the Phillies postseason roster for parts of the postseason. There were guys that apparently were unavailable in Blake Snell, Marcus Stroman, Dylan Cease. Maybe Eduardo Rodriguez would have signed off on going to Arizona. We don't know if they pursued that one. So there were mistakes to be made, and he didn't give up some of their top young players. He said, you know, I don't regret holding on to Alec Thomas and Brandon Pfaadt, but could have probably gone down other avenues with other prospects to give up. Do you agree with, the man says that I probably agree with it, but we all thought they should have grabbed a starting pitcher, and they didn't do it, and they ended up throwing a bullpen game. Is that, you agree with Mike Hazen that he should have done something more?
I mean, I give him credit for being highly critical of himself and being extremely candid. You know, hindsight's 20/20, and he's actually using it to his detriment there. You know, it's tough. I feel like I see what the Diamondbacks did this season, this postseason, going back to the trade deadline. I'm like, I don't want to say anything critical of them. They did great. He did great. They went way further than they should have. And I also look at their system, and because they've promoted so many guys, they did, you know, they made the trade for Sewald in particular. Like, they're a little thin in terms of guys. Like, who else could they have traded? They're not trading Jordan Lawler, not trading Drew Jones, who was hurt at the time of the trade deadline anyway. And just his full season debut was just a fiasco for them. So it's not, you don't trade, even if you've decided you want to trade him, you don't do it now. So, you know, what else could he have done? I think it would have been hard. I think it would have been really difficult for him. And God, if they traded Jordan Lawler for like Jordan Montgomery, who I guess turned out to be the best of all of those, to all the starting pitchers traded, they would have been buried for that. And I don't know that I would have pulled the trigger on that. Jordan Lawler's got a chance to be a superstar. You don't trade that guy for a rental, especially when you're thinking you're hoping to get in as one of the wild cards. Yeah, he's being very hard on himself. And I understand. I completely understand the motivation. I give him a lot of credit for saying it out loud. Those are the thoughts you have internal to yourself or internal to your organization. That he said that to one of our guys is very impressive, and I think tells you a lot about who Mike Hazen is as a person, and that he has this on his conscience. But, you know, that is to me an unfair criticism of himself. And I think if I were sitting next to him, I'd say, you did a hell of a job, man. Look how far this team got, and look at where, how much of Alec Thomas, Corbin Carroll, Brandon Pfaadt, God, Lawler, he ended up on the playoff roster. He popped up in the World Series. I'm like, right, I'm doing the Leonardo DiCaprio thing, right? I'm like, every time any prospect shows up, that's me. But I was like, hey, look how much they did, right? And it shows you how strong the future is. And I got to say, like, this is a little bit of a tangent too, but I lived in Arizona for a few years. Obviously, I go there at least twice a year for work. You know, the thing always is there aren't really that many Diamondback fans because so many people in Arizona are transplants. They bring their fandom from somewhere else. Watching this World Series, even seeing somebody I recognized on the TV broadcast, I'm like, that's Kinley from the Hillside Spot. I know him. Thinking, maybe this is the team that changes that now. They've been there for a while. It's a lot of homegrown players now. When they won in 01, it was a little different. It was a little more of a mercenary team. The fan base hadn't had time to kind of develop. But like Corbin Carroll's a freaking superstar and they've signed him for forever. And they're going to have a couple of these guys now, right? They've got a couple, they're going to build a core that the fans will really be able to connect with. And it gives me some hope now. Maybe that franchise, this can be the team that, especially because I think they're going to make the playoffs several more times at least. Maybe this sort of locks in that fan base a bit more and even converts some of those Cub fans out there in Mesa. Maybe they change and say, okay, I'll be a Diamondbacks fan. Because they're really fun. Like, I like watching this. I enjoyed this team's playoff run quite a bit because they're really fun. And again, Lavulo, I can't say enough. When Lavulo first got the job out there, I didn't think he was great. And he's really grown into that job. And his managing, his in-game managing this postseason was pretty spectacular at times.
If I were Mike Hazen, I may have taken the out just to say, no, I believe in Brandon Pfaat. I knew what I had in Brandon Pfaat.
How about
if I have to, if I have to take two bullpen games in the playoffs, it means we made the World Series and that's okay.
That would be a great answer.
So
not for nothing, like they had other starters, but who like kept getting hurt or just fit. Like I like Ryan Nelson. He might still be a starter, but it wasn't now, certainly. But if you look, when they got into the series with the Phillies, I've mentioned before, my wife's a Phillies fan. She's like, all right, give me the rundown on the Diamondbacks. And I pull up the Diamondbacks roster. I'm like, they have three starters. No, like only three starters on the roster. Like, nobody plans that. that is something has gone very wrong. If you reach this point in October and you literally have three starters on your entire 40-man roster.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So let's spin that ahead. So the rotation for next year, they have Zach Gallen 325, Merrill Kelly 324 with a 25 option. They have Pfaat, who's just finishing up his rookie season. The other options, as I see them, because Dre Jameson just had Tommy John, would be Ryan Nelson, Tommy Henry, Slade Ciccone, I think. What do you think this rotation looks like in 24? You roll that group, or do you sort of make a mea culpa move and go get a mid rotation starter that they didn't get this year?
Yeah, well, I think they're the team. So, and we can talk about the free agent class as a whole later on, but there's some depth starters.
Yeah.
This free agent class is not great, but there are some depth starters out there. They're the team that can go out and say, we need a depth starter. We don't need a one. We don't even necessarily need a two. Always nice to have them. You can never have enough of them. But they need some innings guys. Because you know what? Brandon Pfaat, since they moved him particularly to the other side of the rubber, he has been the Brandon Pfaat those of us who cover prospects thought he was going to be for quite some time. So I feel like you can feel pretty good about him locked into the three or four spot wherever you want to line them up. But it's also hard to look at him and say, 180 innings next year, we're good to go. Right? You're going to need to give him a blow every now and then because just to manage his workload, just so he doesn't get over fatigued, especially if you want to have him pitch into October. So getting some innings in there, even if it's just league average-ish, is going to be a huge, I think should be their biggest priority. It's the thing they could do most to help this club. Because even other guys they have who have some starter characteristics or could project as starters, like I was talking about Ryan Nelson, and you're not looking at any of those guys and saying it's 30 starts, right? You hope Ryan Nelson maybe makes 10 starts and shows some progress. And maybe he doesn't. Maybe he ends up in the bullpen because they decide to go invest, but in the rotation. But the goal should be bulk, bulk, bulk. We need innings more than anything else because – honestly, the rest of the roster looks pretty good to me. Like, I really like what they've built, and it looks really sustainable. And they've got core young players to build around at several positions now, which also, by the way, gives them more financial flexibility to maybe go out and get and pay for that mid-rotation starter.
And like you mentioned, there are a lot of them. We'll get to those in a little bit. In the lineup for the Diamondbacks, there is some work to do. They have free agents heading out the door. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., that traded to Toronto, paid off for them. Evan Longoria, Tommy Pham. It opens up some playing time, left field, third base, DH. They do have some options in the outfield. Jake McCarthy, Dominic Fletcher, third base. We saw Emmanuel Rivera over there. I kind of wonder if they save money with internal options in the lineup, and so they use that money on a starter. But of course, you can do both. No rule against that. And especially if they want to grab a starter for a couple of years, because Gallen and Kelly aren't going to be here forever, and you're going to need some starting pitcher help down the road. Where are you sort of focusing on those internal upgrades in the lineup? Are there options there? Do they have to go outside?
They could put Jordan Lawler at third base.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
That to me seems like the easiest thing. Third base is a black hole and has been for quite some time out there, really since Jake Lamb started to get hurt and kind of derailed his career. They've not really had a good solution at third base, I think, since then. And even that was pretty short-lived. So to me, that's the easiest thing they can do to inexpensively solve a lineup issue. And I do think Jordan Lawler is going to be really, really good. And I bet if they put him over at third base, it's going to be really good defensively too. Cause I know people, scouts who think he's not going to be able to stay at shortstop. I'm not running him off the position yet, but I also recognize they have a really good shortstop who looked really, really good in the World Series too. Slide Lawler over to third and bat him seventh or eighth for a good chunk of the year and let the bat develop. And then put your money into the pitching staff. Like, that seems to me like a really good, a much better strategy. I mean, and you know what? And then maybe they choose to go get, there's not a lot of this help out there. So maybe it's trade rather than signing, but you know, another outfielder, especially Jake McCarthy kind of took a big step back this year. And I mean, I do like him. I don't think he's a star, but if he's your third or three and a half, right, platoon outfielder, something like that, you're fine. It's the only other place I could see them really choosing to invest, because also the infield market stinks. It's not like there's some great third baseman out there where, you know, could they go get Matt Chapman? Sure. Is that the player I would want them to get if I were sitting there next to Mike Hazen and Amil Sade and all those guys? And would I say, yeah, let's go get him? No, I'd be like, just pitching, man. Just go get pitching. We're good on the position player side. We got guys here. We got a couple guys coming. Let's go and address the pitching side, because that is where they're thin. And even on the prospect side, they don't have a ton of, they don't really have a lot of pitching coming on the prospect side either, not close at least. Whereas what they have coming, and as I said, they've thinned out because of promotions and trades, but it's almost all position players. And so I would really very much say the investment in pitching is not just for 2024. It's like you said, they've got those guys might be leaving, Gallen and Kelly. They'd have to at least have to be re-signed at great expense. So finding a starting pitcher who will get them through maybe 3 or 4 years would really be a better use of their resources.
I was going to ask you about Lawler potentially moving to third, because Geraldo Perdomo, there was a Fangraphs headline back in May that said, how on the earth is Geraldo Perdomo pulling this off? This guy's hitting the ball with no barrels, no exit velocity to speak of. He's a good defender, doesn't have a ton of steal speed, but he had 15 or so bags this year, but he gets his entire offensive value from his eye. There's no chase. There's no walk. There's no whiff, ton of walks, no strikeouts. And that guy can sit ninth in my lineup for as long as he wants. And while he's doing that, he can play shortstop. Great. Now, if the bat completely falls off, okay, maybe Lawler can still pick things up at third base, but they do have options there, because Ketel Marte has been has really turned back into the guy we thought he was after a down season, and boy, he was awesome in the postseason. So before we turn the page and head to the Rangers side of things, I do want to give a shout out to Corbin Carroll, what he was able to do in his rookie season. We saw almost an identical OBP in the regular season and the postseason, 362 to 364. The slug was missing October is like one thing he was missing, but still, in adding out these totals together, 172 games as a rookie this year in postseason and regular season, 284 batting average, 363 on base percentage, 27 homers and 59 steals and 65 tries. That ain't just the bases, folks. That is some actual foot speed. He just turned 23 in August. The D-backs have him through 31 if they would like him. 2031, not his age 31. I mean, even longer than that, probably. But I could think of worse players to build a core around.
Oh my God! Credit to them too. When I remember when Carroll got hurt, especially I was always a Carroll guy back to high school. But when he got hurt, that first season was 21, played a week, blew out his shoulder on a home run swing. And talking to people in the Diamondbacks organization that summer, they were like, he's our best prospect. It's not even close. Yeah, this sucks, but it's not going to hold him back. He's at the ballpark every day. He's charting. He's asking questions. He's watching pitchers. We've never seen anybody study the game like this guy. And they were right. Everything they ever said about their own guy. Because I mean, always a little bit of a skeptical. I have to be a little bit skeptical when teams are talking about their own players. Everything they ever said about him turned out to be true. And frankly, everything that scouts said about him, you know, he has been every bit that player. And you know, I'll go back to stuff I said in 2019. If that guy was 6'2", he would have been in the mix for the first overall pick. And I guess Diamondbacks have to be really happy he's like 5'9".
Looking at the Rangers now, the now defending champs, they're going to have some work to do with remaking this roster a little bit, although the important pieces I think are still there. In the pitching staff, Jordan Montgomery, Jake Odorizzi, Martin Perez, Will Smith, Chris Stratton, Aroldis Chapman, Ian Kennedy all headed to free agency. In the lineup, Mitch Garver, Austin Hedges, Robbie Grossman, Travis Jankowski, and Brad Miller. Garver really the only one, I think, of huge consequence. They're going to, I'm sure, pick up the club option on Jose Leclerc as their closer. So this pitching staff, they have Max Scherzer, $43.333 million. The Mets are kindly picking up a portion of that. Nathan Eovaldi is still here for another year and potentially a third. John Gray, Andrew Heaney still there. Dane Dunning still there. And Jacob DeGrom was at least last he talked about it, talking about August, potential August 24 return. You just at that point, just hope he's there for the playoffs. If he's there,
right,
great.
It's right. Bonus. You just don't know.
Wouldn't be the worst arm to have come the playoffs.
No, right.
Yeah. So I think the rotation is pretty much set there. They're not going to go get a free agent, I don't think. But I want to ask, like, Jack Leiter? Could Jack Leiter possibly be in the mix to not opening day, but make the majors? He's had awful numbers, even when healthy, 5+ walks per 9. Like, what do they do with Jack Leiter?
Yeah, I don't know. I struggle a lot with that one, because if you told me Leiter got into pro ball and the stuff just wasn't quite good enough, right? He never threw super hard. And if you said the stuff, especially pitching every fifth or sixth day instead of every seventh, the stuff backed up a bit and he was getting hit too hard, I would have said, all right, well, yeah, was never out of the question. It's always a possibility with a guy like that, but that's not what it is. It's commanding just control, which is to me just so shocking, because this was a guy with a really good delivery who did seem to, he didn't have elite command in college, but you could see it there, right? This is a guy, again, a great delivery, apparently a really smart kid, according to the Vanderbilt folks and people who knew him going back to high school, even somebody you thought would eventually be a real strike thrower who would get more outs because he could really locate. And he's been just dead opposite of that. And I don't have a good explanation for how that's happened. It also doesn't give me a lot of optimism. If I could point to something and say, well, it's a little bit of a delivery thing, Brandon Pfaadt on the wrong side of the rubber, or, oh, he's been dealing with a nagging injury, I don't know anything about any of that, right? I don't have an explanation for that. So I don't want to say never. Guys certainly have shown up after an off season looking totally different. Maybe he does, but I don't have any particular reason for optimism with him. Like, I would feel better about, I know his year was not great, but if you said who makes more starts for the Rangers in 2024, Jack Leiter or Owen White, I would go with Owen White. Yeah. I still like Owen White more as a prospect. And I think I think the things that went wrong for Owen White are much easier to fix or deal with, maybe I should say, than what's gone wrong for Leiter.
Yeah. The bullpen's going to need a little bit of attention with Smith, Stratton, Chapman all gone. I think they probably go do a little bit of work in free agency, picking up someone in hopes that they just aren't holding their breath every time the guys go out in the late innings. I think you kind of just thank the heavens that the things held together in the postseason and don't count on it happening again. So I would anticipate they probably do a little bit of work there.
Could you see them just trying to do a year with Chapman, just quick, just going back with him and saying, this worked out. I mean, Chapman, look, I even said in my free agent rankings, right? I wouldn't want him because of all the character stuff. However, if I'm just ignoring that for the moment, just talking in baseball terms, and you could talk yourself into Chapman, I think, and say all the character stuff is many years ago, or at least the public stuff. I'm not trying to, I'm not excusing anything. I'm not trying to get into that. If you are just saying, can this guy pitch for us, throw 60 innings for us next year, and he was fine for them, I could see them doing that. Just saying, right, he's right here. Just the familiarity is there. Rather than going out and acquiring somebody else, Chapman's still pretty effective, and we've already got him. They have exclusive negotiating for a couple more days anyway. Like, that's the one of all those guys I could see him saying, yeah, we'll just bring this guy back for a year. You can be, you know, because you could. He could be your seventh, eighth, ninth inning guy. He's got closer experience if you care about that stuff. And
right,
I think what you saw from him in the postseason is pretty much what he is.
Yeah, he didn't pitch well enough to price him into a high contract or a 2-year deal, I don't think. So just sure,
yeah.
The run it back for another year. Why not see if you get something? And if he and Josh Boers can handle the seventh and eighth, like, wow, that was unexpected.
Here we are. And then you're in good shape, right? Then you're right, like, you know, if you're. You want more. You always want more guys than that, of course. You know, and maybe Jack Leiter moves to the bullpen even as a temporary thing and gets a little bit of a velocity bump or lets you work with him a little bit. Like, I think because there's going to come a point, too, where you can't just keep running Leiter out there at the same level in the minors. You bring him up to the majors and let him work with the major league coaching staff and see if they can figure something out. And maybe just make him a bulk guy out of the bullpen and see if you outwalk, which allows you to tinker with him kind of on the fly. Then they would be trying to fill the back part of the bullpen, which I think is an easier thing for them to do in this market. Because again, the markets, there's some relievers out there. The relief market is certainly all the pitching side of the free agent market is way better than the position player side. There's some relievers, but relievers are also just a super risky group anyway. And you know, they might just feel better saying, we're going to target some guys with some 1-year deals. And if we've got to rebuild that a little bit on the fly or, you know, move some starter prospects in our system to the bullpen, we can do that, you know, midseason.
This lineup, I think they don't need to do a lot of work in free agency, which is good because there isn't much out there. But the infield is totally set, right? Jonah Heim, yep. Nathaniel Lowe, Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Josh Young, they're good. Even if Nathaniel Lowe struggled a bit in the postseason, like they're sticking with him at first base. So kind of we're left with outfield and DH and outfield, I think they're fine. They had Leo Tavares out there, this postseason, and they have Evan Carter and Adolis Garcia. They're going to stay there, and you have Wyatt Langford waiting as well, right? And so I don't know that they need to do a lot there. And so Mitch Garver is the one that I could maybe see them trying to run it back because they like the two catcher thing, even if he wasn't really catching down the stretch. You could maybe try to do that, but if Garver is going to take a significant contract, they probably won't do it. But I think that's the only place they would really, if they want to add impact at DH, they could do that. But they probably can just rotate in there.
Yeah, the one thing I would probably like to do in their situation. So, yeah, Langford's going to be ready very soon, if not opening day, pretty close. So they've got four real outfielders. Like Langford's a corner guy. They've got two guys who can truly play center in Carter and Leody. So they can rotate those four guys through the three outfield spots and DH, and then everybody pretty much plays every day. They wouldn't be the worst thing for them to maybe pick up another right-handed hitting outfielder because, look, Evan Carter looked great in the postseason, but his limited track record in pro ball showed some weakness against lefties. And you don't want to bench him against lefties permanently because he's got to learn, and he's still very young, and he just needs more at-bats against them. But also there might be certain days where you say, all right, you know, this is a good day to give Carter a rest and have a right-handed batter, right-handed hitting outfielder on the roster to maybe give him a spell because it's the one spot where there might be a little weakness there. Like if you're going to, you got to go get another outfielder anyway. You want to have one extra one so that those four guys aren't literally playing 162 games. That would be the one thing I could see them doing. But like you said, they're pretty set. You know, Jonah Heim can be the everyday catcher, clearly. Like I agree with you. I think Garver is a guy they're thrilled that they had him, but probably won't feel compelled to bring him back. If it's a multi-year deal, so we can put that money and that roster spot elsewhere. That's probably as much as anything else is just saying, we'll do something else with the roster spot.
You had Evan Carter at number 10 in your midseason top 60. So it's not like he came out of nowhere. He always had high OBP, could play center field if needed. We saw his defense and his offense and his wheels this postseason. Were you surprised by the impact you had him see in October?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, full disclosure, I was one of the many people when he was drafted in the second round in 2020. I was like, what the heck? Like, he was way off everyone's radar. I don't think anybody, I'm pretty sure the pipeline guys also didn't have him on their pre-draft. Definitely on our top 100. They go deeper. He was not on my top 100. I still remember the scout I know down there. I was like, this guy struck out a ton in high school. How can you take that guy? Props to the Rangers. They had a hell of a draft that year. Thomas Sajace was in that draft class. He was the guy who, one of the two guys they ended up trading for Jordan Montgomery. Justin Foscue was their first rounder that year. He hasn't gotten to the big leagues yet, but he will. He might be a guy they trade this winter too if they want to go the trade route to try to supplement, because he's an infielder, try to supplement their rotation. He'd probably be the first guy to dangle out there. He had a great year in AAA. The walk rate might be a little inflated because walks, we've discussed this, Derek and I have discussed this, walks were way up in AAA this year. Still, Justin Foscue looks like he could play every day for some teams right now. That draft looks incredible, and they did a hell of a job on Carter. I think they knew Carter extremely well. Remember, it was 2020, so we didn't get much of a spring. And, you know, the other thing that's interesting on Carter, too, he played a month in 2021 and got hurt. Now, the month was great. It was sort of like, I don't know what we have. It's like 100 at-bats. How much of a judgment are we going to make off of that? And that guy kept getting better. Once he started playing regularly in 2022, he just kept improving. His at-bats kept improving. His approach kept improving. And it's why I don't really worry about him being a platoon player forever. Yeah, he has not hit lefties that much in pro ball so far. However, that guy's made so many improvements so far, so many adjustments so far in really like the last 18 months since he's been playing regularly. He'll get there at some point. So yeah, I'm surprised. And certainly if I go back to what I thought on him in 2020, when I hadn't seen him, I just had info from other teams. Nobody else seemed to have him in the second round like the Rangers did. But on the other hand, this guy just keeps getting better. Players like that, A, tend to become superstars, and B, you shouldn't be surprised when they do things like this, when they show up in the postseason. And God, that guy seemed unfazed by everything. Talk about your low heartbeat. You hit it right. Just, oh, I'm in the World Series. I'm 21. I can barely drink legally. Batting cleanup, right? Against like some pretty talented pitchers too. Yep, totally fine. Taking great at-bats, making impact, hard contact. Like you said, running like crazy. Yeah. Guys who do stuff like that, it's not universal, but yeah, they become stars.
Yeah.
I mean, you might argue Hurdy is one, but he's going to be really, really good. I mean, they are the top three in their system, however you rank them, him, Langford, and then the teenage shortstop, Sebastian Walcott. He's not going to be a shortstop, I think, long-term. But I mean, for a team that just won the World Series to have three prospects like that at the top of their farm system, dang. Good time to be a Rangers fan.
Yeah.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
From that to the free agent bonanza that is about to begin. Keith just put out his top 50 free agent rankings. Tim Britton on our site has been putting out free agent contract projections. If you're kind of curious about what things are going to, what guys are going to go for, we're assuming for this that Marcus Stroman, Michael Conforto, Josh Bell, Justin Turner won't opt out. I think that's pretty safe assumption. The shape of the market is an interesting one. It is weak in general. You wrote there's 11 potential free agent hitters whose 2023 production was it worth at least two F4. That is not a high bar, Keith. And now it's 10 because Max Muncy has signed a two-year deal with the Dodgers. Let's just say you get in your rankings to Max Kepler and Heimer Condelaria a little too fast for my liking.
Kepler, like, they just picked up his option too, so it's another one off.
So you're like, that's all we're dealing with. So that leaves us incredibly starting pitcher heavy. The worst problem for a lot of teams is because all of them come August are looking for somebody at the trade deadline. So seven of your top eight are starting pitchers, if we include Shohei as a starting pitcher. So how do you think that will impact the market? Last year, everyone was waiting around for Carlos Rodon, Clayton Kershaw, Jacob DeGrom, Nate Eovaldi, Justin Turner to sign, or Justin Verlander to sign. And there was like this middle class that was waiting. Now it's the top end of Aaron Nola, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Sonny Gray, Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, Eduardo Rodriguez, I'd probably put in there. How do you anticipate things playing out this postseason?
Is the one of that whole group where I wouldn't be surprised if he came off the board quickly. Yeah. I think the Phillies are incredibly motivated to re-sign him. Everything he's said, at least, indicates he would like to stay in Philadelphia. I do think it's a pretty great fit. And look, if he leaves, the Phillies just have to go sign somebody else also. This is not a situation where it's like, well, we're going to let him go because we can't afford him. They just have to go replace him. And since they made some adjustments with him in September also, other than that very last outing of his season, he looked much better from about mid-September onward. So I think if they had some trepidation on that front, that's probably eased. He's all those guys you just named, the one I think, it wouldn't shock me at all, within a week or so, he signs. Everybody else I could see this dragging on quite a bit. I could see, Blake Snell is with Scott Boras, especially if Snell does win the Cy Young Award. Yeah. Does Boras kind of hold him out for a while because he loves to have the last guy in his category, right? When you want a real starting pitcher, I got the Cy Young Award winner right here, and there's nobody else on the market. So everybody's got to come to me. Great strategy. Absolutely makes sense to me. I could see something like that, one or two of these guys particularly staying out there until we get towards Christmas, for example. Also very curious what kind of market we see for the two Japanese starters out there, Yamamoto and Imanaga, where, Kodai Senga was not that well regarded by scouts I spoke to who spent time in NPB last year, and he had an unbelievable season for the Mets. And we are nothing if not prey to recency bias in this business. And so does that even boost the market for those guys? Yamamoto obviously comes over with the only knock on him is his size. Are those guys, once they're clearly coming over, did their markets get particularly hot early? Does that push back interest in some of the MLB free agents as teams try to figure out where those two guys are going? There are some other NPB free agents coming over. Those are the two sort of clear, they come over here and they're starting pitchers among that class. So, I guess for predictions, I'd say I think Nola comes off the board quickly. Snell might be the one who stays out there for a while, particularly if he wins the Cy Young Award, because I think Scott will try to set a really high price for him, as he should. Certainly, if he's got the hardware, it'd be his second Cy Young Award. And then the rest of these guys sort of in that sort of great middle here, where probably a lot of this stuff happens maybe right after Thanksgiving as we head towards the winter meetings. I always hope we get a lot of signings at the winter meetings anyway, because otherwise they're kind of boring.
Yeah, just a lot of standing around the ballroom chatting. I would love to be privy to the conversations happening in front offices and with ownership about Blake Snell this offseason, because it's like, listen, he has been great. He has the potential to be great, but also he leads the majors in walks, and no one can hit him, and sometimes they don't have to hit him. And it's going to be wild to see what someone's going to pay a ton of money for him. He'll get what he has earned and deserves according to his numbers, but it is it's a tough long-term bet to lay on somebody when you have Anola, who I would trust much more long-term, even Sonny Gray. Yeah, that'll be interesting. So if you look at this middle class, if a year ago, the middle class of the starting pitcher market was like Tyler Anderson, Kyle Gibson, Jameson Taillon, Tyron Walker, Andrew Heaney, that type of player. This year, it's more like Kyle Hendricks, Seth Lugo, Mike Clevenger, Michael Wacha. You have some real wild cards. I consider those guys to be pretty reliable. You know what you're going to get? Lucas Giolito, don't know what I'm getting. Jack Flaherty, don't know. Luis Severino, don't know what I'm getting. What? How are you looking at sort of the, it's not even like the back end of that middle class. It's just like the question mark end of that middle class.
Yeah. And even a lot of the guys you mentioned in the first group, like Walk and Clevenger, it's how many innings do I get? They're pretty good when they're healthy. Seth Lugo, oh, well, God, he's, what is he, 33 or 34 now? And he's turned into this guy. He doesn't have a long track record. Maybe it's because he never got the right opportunity. I don't know. Like, they're very hard guys to project. It's this enormous group of guys I would love on one-year deals, except that's not how the world works, right? It's just whatever the market will pay, where some of those guys are going to end up getting multi-year deals. Giolito and Flaherty particularly stand out to me as perfect guys for one-year deals somewhere to go kind of straighten things out. And I'm not saying I know exactly what's wrong or what ailed either of those guys in the last 2 months, particularly. Both guys changed teams. Giolito changed teams twice. Flaherty changed teams once, and both guys were much worse after the trade deadline. And so is it health? Was it mechanical? Those are perfect guys, though, to go find the Scott Boras pillow contract, where just go get a soft landing somewhere for a year, right the ship, maybe figure out what is wrong, what was wrong. Maybe it's just need an offseason of rest and recovery. Maybe it is mechanical. I don't know. But there are a lot of those guys kicking around on the market this year, where especially if you're, I often call them scavengers, which is probably a little more derogatory than it needs to be. But if you're looking at that end of the market, you're thinking, hey, this Giolito guy was pretty good not that long ago. Maybe we take a shot at him for a year and throw some resources at trying to figure out what went wrong for him at the end of last season. Maybe if it's just a matter, maybe it's a small mechanical thing. I don't know. Something like that to, hey, if you hit 1 year and $12 million, but if you hit, you get a $25 million guy or a guy you can trade at the trade deadline. I think he kind of works both ways. You could say if you could want him if you're a contender because you recognize the upside. You could want him if you're a rebuilding team saying that's a great guy to pick up and maybe trade in July. I think there's a lot of that in the market. Severino, you mentioned, I threw it out there. It's like, put this guy in the bullpen. I always thought he'd have to be a reliever anyway for mechanical reasons. He doesn't stay healthy as a starter. And now he's not that effective as a starter. But somebody might pick him up and say, we want to start him and just maybe get him out of the Bronx and start over. Sure. A lot of those guys where it's like, you got to get a little creative at the back end, probably the whole back half of my list. I don't know where you'd put that line, but I'd put it pretty high, actually, where it's suddenly like, all right, you got to think a little creatively here.
Yeah, we're going to see Scott Boras walk into all negotiations regarding some of these guys like Lucas Giolito's and say, so we'd like a lot of money. You can throw me a multi-year deal, but I'm going to ask for an opt-out after year one.
Of course.
We are going to take opt-outs. They are our friend. Yeah.
That's absolutely. That's what they should be doing. Many of these free agents, all these guys coming off of those years should try to get that. If somebody wants to say, well, we want 2 years because if we're going to put this investment into you, right, we want to pick it up on the back end. You see a lot of these with Tommy John guys. We'll give you a 2-year deal because we're going to basically pay to rehab you in year one, and we're paying for what we're going to get out of you in year two. But if you're Giolito, if you're Flaherty, if you're Severino, lots of these guys coming to the market, you wanted, Robert Stevenson's a guy I felt was really interesting because what was it, about 4 months or so in Tampa Bay? About 4 months. He was one of the best relievers in baseball. If he goes out, does that, I mean, maybe he gets a multi-year deal just off of that, but if he goes out, does that for a full season for someone else, maybe he does parlay that to like a 3-year deal next offseason. So it makes it interesting. Like, I actually think this free agent market could be really interesting, but it's going to be a lot of projecting and maybe wishing on some of these guys rather than feeling really confident in what you're getting. A year ago, this free agent market was awesome. The free agent market was awesome. It was one of the deepest classes ever. And they didn't all work out, but a lot of them did. This year's not like that.
No, not at all. And so let's leave things with the one position player that'll have, I think, GMs going crazy this postseason, which is Cody Bellinger, who's number two on your list. And this, it was the perfect one-year deal for him. He goes to Chicago for 1 year, bats 300, 26 homers, 20 steals, very nearly gets them to the postseason, which was unexpected. Perfect. I know they wanted to keep him. They would love to keep him long-term, but he's a Scott Boras client. He's going to hit the open market. What do you sort of do if you're a GM looking at Cody Bellinger and you say, we have a need at center field and he can absolutely be a plus option out in center field, but also it was terrible in 21 and was quite bad in 22. So I don't know that we can count on him on a 6-year deal to be an all-star every season.
Yeah, it's a risk, right? It's the track record question works against him. To a lesser extent, Jason Hayward, I think, is in a similar situation where both guys made really pretty significant mechanical changes, swing changes, and it changed their profile. And so if you look at Bellinger, and that our guys wrote quite a bit, especially about Bellinger's swing changes, just going into the season. By the time he showed up in spring training, the Cubs had already kind of gotten their hands on him a little bit. I think they signed him knowing certain things they wanted to do. This is a great example of how a really well-run baseball ops organization operates too, where they, multiple people are talking to each other. It's our coaches. What do you see? Do you see things you can do to help this guy get back to the hitter he used to be? Okay, we want to change this and this and this. And I wrote about some of those changes as well. And like I said, our Cubs guys did too. How confident are you? Will you take 1 year of performance, but with clear, tangible reasons for the change in performance and project out 5-6 years on that? I think I would. If I think there's a real underlying, clear underlying explanation that is the cause of the improvement, yeah, I would invest in that long term. I'm not giving Jason Hayward a 6-year deal. I said more with Hayward. It's like, this just might keep him employed, which is very different than Bellinger's situation. But do I buy it? Yeah, in both cases, I do buy it. These guys, what we saw from them in 2023 is real and sustainable. I feel much better about them going forward. And I do think, yeah, Bellinger's not number two in last year's free agent class. This year, there weren't a lot of other options anyway. So I was like, well, someone has to be two. You can't leave it blank. And it was like, yeah, I think I probably would. If I were in a front office, I'd say, yeah, I might not feel super great about it, but I would probably invest in this one long term because he did do this before the injury, before the swing kind of got a little out of his control. We've seen good Cody Bellinger. We saw bad Cody Bellinger, and now we've seen good Cody Bellinger again. So I would do it. And I say that as somebody who's generally I pound the table for track record and larger sample sizes all the time. But I do buy into when we can see the mechanical changes, when people describe them, the player can talk about them, and then we can actually see the evidence in person, on video, whatever. That's when I will say, okay, I will accept the small sample size and project forward on that basis alone.
Yeah. Bellinger wouldn't have been number two last year. Hayward wouldn't have been number 23. The way he played in 22, wouldn't even been on the list last year.
On the list? No. Oh my God.
Pretty crazy what he rediscovered in Los Angeles. But Keith, we're going to hit the exits here. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Tim McMaster for producing today's show. You can find our work all week long at theathletic.com. Subscribe to The Athletic for $2 per month for the first year at theathletic.com/baseball show. The Athletic Baseball Show will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend.